Well, hello, everyone. My name is Michael Allegretti. I'm the director of the Center for State and Local Leadership here at the Manhattan Institute, and very happy to bring to you today a podcast of publicsectorinc.org. And our special guest today is Terry Moe. Terry is the William Bennett Monroe Professor of Political Science at Stanford University. He is a senior fellow at the Hoover Institution, and he is the newest member to our publicsectorinc.org online community. So, Terry, thanks for being on today. He's, of course, the author of a book which just has come out called Special Interest, Teachers' Unions and America's Public Schools by Brookings Institution Press. And, Terry, we just want to spend a bit of time talking about your book today. I will say it's a terrific book, and I urge everyone who listens in today to get out there and get this book. It's just such a comprehensive study of the relationship between teachers, unions, and America's public schools. And so, Terry, I guess I'd start by saying, why'd you feel compelled to write this, and why now?
Well, actually, I felt compelled to write it more than 10 years ago. I've been trying to write it ever since. And I think it's just sort of an accident that I happened to finish it now. You know, I've been doing a tremendous amount of research and reading and thinking over the past decade, and writing for me is a slow process, and it just happened to come out now. And I think now it happens to be a perfect time. But, you know, more generally, I think the reason for this kind of a book is that the teachers' unions are by far the most powerful force in American education. You know, they shape the schools from the bottom up through collective bargaining, where they have profound effects on the way the schools are organized. And they shape the schools from the top down through the political process, where they've played pivotal roles over the last quarter century in blocking fundamental reforms. And so you put these two together, and the unions have just had a tremendous effect on America's public schools and on the reform movement, and yet they're almost never studied. You know, there really isn't a comprehensive academic study of this kind out there. And so I think there's a huge need for this kind of work, and that's what I was trying to accomplish.
Well, you know, you said an academic study of this work, and while the academic rigor is evident, what's also evident is that you're able to take rather complex arguments and put them in terms that regular folks, I guess, can understand. And you touched when you were speaking about just now about collective bargaining. And you talk in the book about collective bargaining as the organizational winner, as the bedrock from which these teachers' unions find their cohesion and find their, I guess you'd almost say, their legitimacy. It's kind of the main thing that galvanizes their action. Can you talk more about that? Because it's a bit confusing to people who maybe don't study this every day, but it's so critical.
Yeah, it really is. Collective bargaining is extremely popular among teachers. I think conservatives especially like to think that they like to focus on the teachers that are forced to pay money to unions and so on when they don't want to. But the fact of the matter is that even Republican teachers who belong to unions are very supportive of their local unions. They're much less supportive of the state unions and the national unions because of their political activities and supporting Democrats and so on. But when it comes to collective bargaining, all teachers, Republicans and Democrats, are very supportive. This is the bedrock of union organization. In states that have collective bargaining laws that promote unionization and promote collective bargaining, the unions are basically guaranteed of getting members and therefore money. And they're guaranteed of this month after month, year after year, and it is the foundation of their power at the local level and also their power at the state and national level, because this is where all the money comes from.
It's an immense amount of money. I think you note in the book that they were the number one contributors, they being the teachers' unions, to the last election cycle. And I suppose if you go back in history, you'd see that over the course of the last few decades for sure.
Yes, it is true. In fact, at the national level, if you aggregate all the spending in federal elections since 1989, the NEA and the AFT together are the number one contributing interest group. And if you go across the states, some 60% of the states, they have been either the number one or number two contributing interest group in state elections, the parties and candidates.
the proof is in the numbers, I guess.
Yeah, really.
You know, Terry, switching gears a bit, as I was reading your book, there's this refreshing honesty to your writing, and many of the readers of this book, I'm sure, will be conservative thinkers, but it's written in such a way that it's quite accessible, really, to anyone. And I felt challenged by you as the reader to kind of think past the caricature of unions that mm-hmm. I've had in my mind, and I think many people have, and to actually look at the power structure and the set of incentives that drive their actions. And, you know, with that frame, you wrote extensively or write extensively in the book about how union leaders, these individuals that many of us, I guess, demagogues sometimes, are not necessarily more radical than, say, their membership and are not necessarily acting out in irrational ways. You urge us to understand that they are doing only what their members want them to do. And as someone who's watched, you know, Randy Weingarten here in mm-hmm. New York for years, this struck me. So can you flesh that out a bit and explain why this is important and why you devoted so much space to getting inside that dynamic?
Yeah, I think it's important not to personalize politics too much and not to personalize interest group behavior too much. Basically, all union leaders have very strong incentives to do what's necessary to keep their organizations prosperous, to retain members, to keep the money coming in. And what this usually comes down to is being very sensitive to what their members want. And it turns out that their members are very supportive of these basic bread and butter issues that have to do with wages and with benefits and with restrictive work rules and with all the kinds of things that the unions actually do in collective bargaining and in politics. And if leaders don't do those things, they're in trouble. You know, they're likely to get tossed out. A basic distinction here that needs to be made all the time is that you have these human beings who may very well love children, who may care a lot about quality education and about making the schools effective. But in those organizational roles as union leaders, they must promote the job interests of their members, and therefore they must do things sometimes that are actually not good for kids and are not good for effective education. And I think that's the basic thing that we see all the time. And there's a connection between members and leaders, so that leaders are basically doing what members want. It's not about union bosses, and especially not about union bosses who don't care about kids and don't care about schools. It's really about incentives.
Mm-hmm. What about when the union goes into issues that really don't seem to have any relevance to public education, some of the social issues mm-hmm. and the like? You speak about that a bit in your book.
Yeah, you know, the activists within the unions are very liberal and very democratic. And in effect, they have to be compensated in some way for their activism. They're very valuable to the unions. Mm-hmm. So how do you, quote, pay them mm-hmm. For all their activity? And the answer is that the unions can give them sort of ideological payoffs by taking stands on, you know, gay rights and abortion and all these other issues that liberal activists tend to care about, but that are only sort of peripheral public education. And they're really not central to the union's political activities. The unions spend almost all their money on core educational issues, mm-hmm. you know, but they give these things out to their activists because, you know, the activists like those kinds of things.
While we're on the notion of activists, if we could go over to California for a moment, where I know you spend your time. In the book, you talk about New York and Washington, two school systems that have made great strides recently thanks to mayoral control. But here at the Manhattan Institute, we're also looking very carefully at California, and we're deeply concerned about that state and about how its teachers' unions are impacting the education system. Based on your work, what do you think might be a path forward for California? What do you think might need to happen in some of those school districts to see real change?
What I try to do in writing this book is just be realistic, you know, and if it leads to depressing conclusions, it just does, right? So California is depressing, right? California is a state where the teachers union is very powerful, and it's a state controlled by Democrats. And so the state government is very responsive to the teachers unions. especially the CTA, and is not inclined to cross them. Mm-hmm. And so I would say if anyone expects California government to stand up to the unions and really transform education, either at the state or local level, where it's not going to happen. Right? I think California is in very serious trouble.
Well, on that note, I want to end us on a positive note. If there is a
certainly not going to come in California. You know, I mean, Jerry Brown was elected almost entirely based on contributions from public sector unions and the California Teachers Association. And one of the first things he did was to appoint a lobbyist from the California Teachers Association to the state school board. That's just sort of a tip-off of his approach to education reform. We're basically not going to get it.
As I said before, there is a refreshing honesty in your writing, and that certainly does come through. I want to thank you, Terry, for joining us today and urge everyone to get this book and to visit publicsectorinc.org. Go to our must-read section where you can be directed to the book page and to see our great blog as well, where experts like Terry and many of the folks here at the Manhattan Institute throughout the day are commenting on issues such as the ones we've just discussed and others related to public employment across the country. The book, again, is Special Interests, Teachers, Unions, and America's Public Schools by Terry Moe. Terry, thanks again.
Thank you. I enjoyed it.
Take care.